All right, welcome from the Watch Well podcast. This is Parker, and this is my co-host, Nick. Nick, how's it going?
I'm doing well. Excited that we just finished our first live stream discussion. Went from topic to topic, reviewing or going back and recapping some episodes. But in addition to that, excited to be here in person, face-to-face. I'm doing a movie review.
It does feel better when we're in studio.
Yeah.
It definitely does feel better. Yeah. So let's see. What movie are we doing today, Nick?
We are going to do A Quiet Place Part 2.
A Quiet Place Part 2.
Maybe less about waterfalls.
Maybe less about waterfalls.
Who knows?
It might come up again. It may come up again because there's a specific scene that uses water,
yeah,
to drown out sound.
But I don't. We'll get there.
We'll get there. What facts do you have about this movie for us?
So I'll start with just some ratings. This movie is rated PG-13.
Are we doing plugged in or comments?
We will be doing that here in a second. So the so we like to prepare you and inform you about what content is in some of the movies that we review, so you can make decisions about what you want to watch and what you don't want to watch, what you can feel convicted about, and you can use your own judgment on those things. But so Common Sense Media, which is a movie review source that will break down all the content in the film for you and give you a recommendation. The recommendation from Common Sense Media is that only those 14 and over watch this film.
Okay.
Which is interesting because it's only rated PG-13, but they're making the recommendation of 14 and over. And so that's one source that you can use for making those kinds of decisions. And Plugged In Movie Reviews. Do you have that in front of you? I actually don't have it in front of me. Do you have what they say?
So A Quiet Place Part 2, as you guys can see on your screen right now, if you're watching from the YouTube video podcast, if you're in audio, Plugged In Media says A Quiet Place Part 2 has a content caution. It's heavy for kids, it's medium for teens and adults.
Yeah. So who should watch this?
I tend to agree with the reviews. I think 14's good. I know a lot of we always preface what we say by the age of the maturity of the kid. I would say if your kid is, you know, a little bit more mature, maybe 12, 11, but probably not much past 11. Because it is pretty scary. The monsters look pretty gross, and I would say because of the sound design and how knowing this, you know, if you didn't know this, then maybe not. Maybe you wouldn't have taken this into account. But the sound design was specifically engineered to bring you into the movie.
Yeah.
Most movies aren't that. Sound design is just trying to be realistic.
Mm-hmm.
And because of the dramatization of the sound design, I think that it makes it that much more. I mean, the word they used was peril, so I would agree with with that.
Yeah.
Because it does make it more intense.
What other movie did we review that they used that?
What?
Peril.
Probably The Dark Knight.
Was it The Dark Knight?
Yeah.
Yeah. So far, this might be jumping the gun, but 2 for 2 in good movies that have high amounts of peril.
Yeah. Yeah. Yeah.
So you think you're on the side of 14, maybe a little younger,
depending upon the maturity.
It's just weird because, you know, I don't know if the quality of the MPAA's ratings, but PG-13 means that if you're 13 years old, you can get into this movie at the theater without a parent.
Yeah.
But then Common Sense Media is saying, let's not, 14 and up shouldn't.
So you're saying the discrepancy between the actual ratings and a third party rating?
I just think it's interesting. Yeah, I don't know if that really says anything, but And it's different sources, so they have different opinions, and they're gonna, you know,
there was actually,
weigh
now that you
things,
say that,
but it's just interesting.
Years ago, there was a documentary on Netflix. More than 6 years ago, and I can't remember what it was called, but it may have been called MPAA.
Okay.
But it was and I never watched it, but the documentary was about how the Motion Picture Association of America, I think, right?
Yeah, that's it.
How they actually rate movies.
Okay. It probably has a lot more. I know when you film a movie, they'll shoot for a certain rating. So, like, they know going in whether they're going to try to get an R rating or whether they're going to try to get a PG-13 rating when they're filming
a
movie.
And I'm sure that there's a curriculum, if you would, or like
a book.
Yeah, that shows, like, this many F words or this many nude scenes or whatever would present an R-rated or unrated or PG-13 or G or whatever, because even like Disney movies back in the day had subliminal messaging and different things like that, and they were G and PG-13, and so they know the game for sure.
Yeah.
So
along with that,
real quick before we get into this, because there were some things I forgot to do, housekeeping. I'm trying to do better at this, and we jumped right into it because I'm excited. But if you're watching on YouTube, please leave comments, like the episodes that you enjoy or that you get value from. If you're on Facebook, or if you just listen to the RSS feed, the audio version of the podcast,
Spotify,
Google
Apple,
Podcasts, if you're listening to it on the actual audio version, there's stars at the top of the episode or the podcast itself. If you would go in and you would rate us, give us a good review, that would be helpful because it helps the algorithm and it helps us reach a wider audience with our content,
and it helps us to know what works and what doesn't.
Correct.
And obviously we want 5-star reviews to get us so that we can start getting pushed out there,
right?
But we also want honesty.
We do,
right? We want honest feedback about what's going on,
right? And if you don't like an episode and you give that a 1-star, if it goes by, I can't remember if it goes by episode or if it's just the podcast itself,
it depends on the platform.
Yeah, it might. But we want to help. We want you guys as the audience to kind of direct where we go and what value you value. So if you're on Facebook and you follow us, we would ask that you would share by posting your favorite episode on your page. Just those little things help us reach more people because we want to reach them with the gospel as best we can, and we want to help teach others to view stories and life through the lens of truth so that we're a Christian all the time, even in our minds and how we view the world. So that's really, really important. So we would appreciate it if you guys could help us do that. And I am done with all of that boring
stuff. All
right,
and now that you said all of that and we can get back to what we were talking about, what were we talking about?
You were about to go into something different.
I don't think I was going to change the topic. I think what I was going to say is usually movies like this are R. Not because of the suspense, and I don't mean that. I mean movies in the genre. Horror movies, suspense thrillers, they're usually R-rated, and because they have excessive amounts of gore, excessive amounts of cussing and language. But I think this movie and the first one prove that all of that's completely unnecessary. None of it is ever needed. Now, there might be, you know, certain bloody scenes and things like that you need in a to tell a story, but the excessive gore and excessive cussing isn't at all needed to display peril, right? To demonstrate peril to the audience, you don't need that stuff. Because here we have, I recently bought this on 4K Blu-ray disc, and it came, and on the disc, the review that they tout for their, as for marketing purposes, is it says a master class in suspense. And I think that's true. And yet, none of the gore. I mean, there's blood because you have to when you have monsters and things, but it's not excessive. And none of the language that I can recall off the top of my head, I can't think of any I can't think of any time where there's cussing, where there's profanity or anything like that. Can you remember?
No, most of the movie is quiet.
Fair enough.
So
yeah.
So they can't.
So yeah.
But I would ask you, I think we need to define what excessive gore is. Because I still think that it depends on the movie and the story, because I would ask you, what's excessive gore?
Well, there are a lot of movies, and the one that comes to mind, and this isn't true of all of the Saw movies, but I think probably as Saw became a kind of a meme thing. Of itself, a thing where they just keep making them and making them, it became a thing where gore replaced suspense. And rather than being in a place where you feel what the character's feeling, you're just watching something gory. And rather than feeling suspense, you're just made to feel queasy because of the gore you're watching. And then you just, like, that kind of thing.
Yeah, so I think
that's the most...
So I guess excessive in that line of thinking would just be gore. You just use enough to get the point across for what the plot needs.
Exactly.
And then be done with it.
Yeah,
don't go overboard. I just wanted to define that, because if you're talking like a medical movie, then you may need to be more gory with surgery or different things like that. If you're in a war movie, you know, Saving Private Ryan, the guy's guts is hanging out on the beach at Omaha.
But that's like one specific scene at the beginning of the movie.
Right.
And then the rest of the movie,
it was pretty okay.
Yeah, pretty tame in terms of gore. Yeah, like there's still explosions and bombs.
And I know we're getting a little off topic here, but the scene where the medic got shot after they tried to take that hill with the machine gunner.
Yeah.
Well, it was really gory, and all they saw was the blood, and they were putting pressure on the wound. And then he was a medic, so he was like, "Oh, my liver," because he knew his liver was going into failure.
Right.
And they got the point across with the dialogue in.
Right.
At the same time as he was bleeding out.
Yeah. Sometimes not showing something increases the impact that it has.
Right.
And
so,
I think these movies do that.
Yeah.
And like, just because somebody shoots a gun, right, doesn't mean that you have to show what happens to a person when they're hit with that bullet.
Correct.
Right?
I agree.
You can imply it.
Yeah.
And I think so, to go back again, the two movies that we've reviewed that give that rating of peril, you know, that have lots of peril, The Dark Knight and The Quiet Place, find gore in The Dark Knight.
There's none.
And there's tons of guns, there's tons of explosions, tons of deaths, tons of murders, tons of fighting, and it's a classic, yet the blood isn't there. It's not needed.
Yeah.
Right? So there's, and obviously war movies, you're trying to show...
Well, you want realism.
You want realism, yeah.
But you don't want realism just for realism's sake. Like,
right.
Yeah, like, yeah.
You want it to make sense with your story.
No, I agree. 100%
So I think that's something that this movie does really well, is that it proves that you don't need that stuff. And I wish that's the kind of thing that got copied in other movies. But now, you know, 10 years from now or 5 years from now, we're going to get something that's clearly directly related to A Quiet Place and A Quiet Place Part 2. But then the thing they copy is the premise of the movie, and then they just add a bunch of gore to it, rather than actually copying the actual way it builds suspense, right? So we talked about that a little bit with Avatar, how everyone copied the 3D.
Mm-hmm.
They just said, this movie needs 3D, when it didn't really need it. That's what's going to happen. People are going to copy the premise, like, you know, you're in this situation where you can't talk, or you're in this bird box, you're in this situation where you can't see. You know, maybe there's one that you can't, you literally, maybe it takes the main daughter's experience literally and says you can't hear anything,
mm-hmm.
right? So maybe there's some movies that do that, and then they're going to add a ton of gore, have a terrible story, and say, yeah, we were inspired by A Quiet Place, right? But they're copying all of the parts that you can't copy. Right, they're copying the worst parts of it, or the parts that don't deserve to be copied necessarily. Does that make sense? I don't.
Yeah, no,
I'm kind of rambling, but
yeah, no, I think it's great stuff. I don't know if there's a movie like The Quiet Place. Like, I'm trying to think of a movie that I could compare it to. I don't think there is.
Yeah, I can't think of one.
If you guys are listening and you think of one, put it in the comments for us, and we'll review that, and maybe we'll do like A Quiet Place versus whatever that movie is.
Yeah.
We'll do like a movie off or something like that.
I can think of a TV show that I wanted to bring up, and it's not the same. Like, the premise isn't the same, but the way it used to build suspense was very similar. But I want to bring that up in a little bit when I'm talking about something else.
Okay, fair enough. Cool. So we did the movie review. Or I'm sorry, we did the ratings.
Mm-hmm.
We got that out of the way. You know, A Quiet Place, if you want to do a little like a rundown, the second one, is it a prequel or a sequel? And then you can start there and just talk.
So A Quiet Place is a little bit of both. It gives you a glimpse into the past before the events of the first movie. And then, but the main story is after the events of the first movie. So there's some flashbacks that give you a glimpse of how, or not necessarily how, but what took place at the beginning. And then it brings you forward into the events after the events of the first movie. So we have all of the main characters are back. So John Krasinski, his character, is back in the flashback scenes. You got the family there. And you have one new character.
Okay.
Played by
Cillian Murphy.
Cillian Murphy.
Yep.
Character's name is Emmett. He is a friend of the family, a friend of John Krasinski's character, and you meet him in the flashback scene.
Yeah, did we confirm that he wasn't a brother?
Cause not a brother.
Through the movie, right. I thought he was brother.
Yeah. No, not a brother.
Not a brother.
Yeah. So, yeah, so this is from Wikipedia, which take or leave it in terms of accuracy, but it says Cillian Murphy is Emmett, a friend of Lee's, who is now a hardened, reclusive survivor whose children were killed by the aliens and wife died of an unspecified illness.
Mm-hmm.
So he's all alone when the family comes across him.
I think that's a good place to start, maybe, because that's kind of how, you know, when I watched that, it was kind of the ability to move on kind of hit me. And maybe we can just kind of brainstorm this thought a little bit, because I thought about this through the movie, but I didn't actually go through the Bible to kind of pick things up. But it made me honestly.
You were watching it through a particular lens?
Maybe.
Yeah.
Maybe.
Okay.
But it kind of made me, let's see. It's really hard to move on. So kids died. His kids were killed by the aliens, and then his wife. And we find out later in the movie, and this is a spoiler alert for everybody, if you're just catching on. If you're new to the podcast, we talk about the entire movie. So this is your chance to click off of the podcast, go watch the movie, come back to the podcast, and rejoin the conversation. But we find out he keeps his wife's body in the attic, right?
Mm-hmm.
Or what? In that, what is that, a warehouse?
Mm-hmm.
Industrial complex or something.
I can't think of the word for it. I actually just read it.
It was kind of, wasn't there trains or something around it, like a train yard or something? I don't know what it was.
They call it a steel foundry.
Okay, steel foundry. In the steel foundry, because the kid goes off. Was it the boy? Yeah, the boy gets trapped. He gets trapped, but
yep,
he's a bear
trap.
Yeah, but later in the movie, he wanders off into that steel foundry, and then he walks up the stairs, and then he finds his wife's body.
Mm-hmm.
And it's kind of a baggage that Cillian Murphy's character just can't get over.
Which, I mean,
it would be hard
relatable.
To get over.
Yeah.
Absolutely relatable. And
he's bitter. He's angry.
Yeah. And I just kind of made me think of being dead in our sins. I don't know if there's like a perfect similarity or parallel.
Yeah.
But it's that pull of like, maybe I need to confess something, but I don't want, I just can't do it.
Yeah.
You know, or I need help and I don't want to go, like I know I need help, but I just can't let my pride go so that I can go seek it out. You're searching for something.
I had my Bible. I don't have anything to look for immediately, but I had it up and I was like,
it was that I'm stuck here and I have this baggage and I can't go anywhere with it on my own.
Yeah.
But I know I need help.
For sure.
It's kind of that thought was just kind of hanging out as I saw that scene where the kid discovered the body. And then it was like, oh, my gosh, like now you're just looking at it. So it's like mm-hmm. you wake up and you just look at your sin or you look at the problems baggage. And that baggage just every day, and you're alone and you're isolated, and like that just felt real.
Yeah,
that just felt real.
And usually when you're stuck in that kind of situation, you do isolate yourself.
You do, yeah.
Like and that's kind of in the movie. You really don't have a choice.
And
it's
may
not
look,
like a yeah. way to, but in reality, you know, in the real world, you do isolate yourself when you're stuck in something. You don't want people to know. You don't want people to find out about it. You don't want to confess it. You might even feel grief about doing it, but you still, at the same time, while you feel that grief, you're like, I'm not going to let it go.
Or and you're yeah, kind and of wrestling. You're kind of battling, but I think that, yeah, I don't want to pick on the way that you just worded that, but a lot of it's like, I don't know how or I don't. There's a lot of different reasons for I don't want to.
Sure.
If that makes sense. It's fear, it's pride, and you know, pride is more of a negative than fear, I think, if you had to rate it, because if you're scared, at least you're being prevented. I don't really know how to communicate that, but pride seems worse to me than fear.
Mm-hmm.
Because pride is like you have to get over yourself. Fear is I don't know what's going to happen and what I may lose. That seems more of a understandable excuse. They're both excuses, yeah. And you still need to get over both of them, confess, repent, turn to Jesus. But one seems it seems to be a little bit easier to give sympathy to the fear,
mm-hmm.
you know, than the pride,
yeah.
If that makes sense.
I wonder if that's because of our own willingness to lie to ourselves about our own sin.
Yeah, yeah, like, absolutely.
We don't want to give sympathy to somebody who's prideful because we want to believe that we're not, right? Like,
yeah,
we want,
maybe, yeah.
it's hard to, or at the very least, we're not okay admitting our own pride.
But I guess, I mean, is there any merit in saying that there's more of a... there's lack of a repentant heart if you're prideful?
Well, I mean, yeah, I think those two things are
in opposition. Yeah,
yeah, in opposition to one another. I mean, you can't really remain prideful admitting your own pride.
Right. Right. Right, yeah.
Like, or at least not believing it's prideful.
Right. Yeah.
Right.
Yeah.
I mean, you could call yourself, "Oh, I'm not a humble person," and you could say that kind of jokingly, and you could admit that, but you can't confess it,
right.
And remain prideful, right? Yeah. I mean, it can be a struggle, but you're not, the act of confessing something is a lack of a better, a bullet to your pride.
Yes.
Right? It's
yeah. humility is yeah. what it is.
Yeah. So those two things are at odds.
Yeah. So I don't know. I just, that was kind of random, but I did think about that in that scene.
Yeah. What how far into the movie was that? Do you remember?
That was mid to beginning, I think it was after the climax of the movie.
Okay.
Or at maybe as it's climaxing, because you see the reveal, and then I think it goes into the kid has to retreat to the bunker.
The towel doesn't get right there, and then it locks behind him, and they're running out of oxygen.
Mom went to go get oxygen, yeah.
Right.
For the baby.
Okay. Yeah, that's good. And so the family finds him initially. By, you know, their house is destroyed, basically. It's,
mm-hmm.
And so they journey in whatever direction they're going. They're walking towards this, and then the son gets trapped in a bear trap,
mm-hmm.
like captures his leg, and now he's now injured throughout the whole movie. And
I just want to make sure that we're on the same page here, because the scene where the kid goes and finds the body is after.
Way after that.
It's way
yeah.
after. Okay,
yeah.
we did.
So
jump.
I'm just.
We
yeah,
jump.
I'm just, yeah.
In the, you're rebuilding. Okay,
yeah, I'm just
gotcha.
Giving the.
Gotcha.
Yeah, just trying to give the context of everything. And so he gets trapped in that bear trap, which I assume, and I don't. I don't think they'd say it directly, but I assume it was set by Cillian Murphy's character.
I assumed that.
Yeah, it makes sense that it would be maybe trying to trap the monsters, trap the...
Something. Yeah, yeah. I don't...
Maybe
I don't,
catch food? Yeah. I don't know. Maybe...
it's got to be something because he was right there Overwatch with his rifle.
Yeah, and he was watching it all. So so that's how they come together. That's how they meet. Is he
Which
kind of...
is another point.
There you go. Okay.
It's another point because... sorry, I'm organizing my thoughts. I would say the in end of time scenarios, you find out really quick who is your friend and who's not your friend. And I would say that our sinful nature is just right out in front of us, just put on display because how like he's a friend of the family.
Mm-hmm.
And you can't tell me he didn't realize who they were.
Right.
To not
definitely recognize.
Not to throw something out there, warning. I know you can't make noise and you may be letting what's happening and then you're going to reap kind of the fallout.
Mm-hmm.
But he knew who those people were. Yeah.
And that's kind of his
he did
journey.
Nothing.
That's kind of his character's journey.
Right.
From that, he's the anti-hero, basically. He's that reluctant.
I don't know
first.
If I would. Yeah, I don't know if I would say anti-hero, but he's. I think he's the normal person.
Fair enough.
He's the normal person that gets scared and lets fear rule their life.
But he's not interested in, at all at the beginning in helping.
No,
in any way,
because he's scared.
Right.
And he's letting fear like rule his life. And I think a lot of people can relate to that with what's happened over the last couple of years.
Yeah.
With COVID and you know, letting fear. You know. I don't know. It's just you find out when you can't eat how important others are to you. And mm-hmm. I think for the normal person,
they're not. Right.
But because we're sinful.
Yeah.
So
there's a lack of self-sacrificial love.
Right. Are you willing to let someone else eat when you don't know the next meal is going to come? And I think the answer for a lot of us is not.
Right.
I choose me. And I think that that can be healthy. I think that can be healthy, but when you're talking about, you know, like for instance, the reason why I say it can be healthy, maybe you disagree. You know, in healthcare, a lot of the times they teach us to make sure that we're safe first,
mm-hmm.
because if we get hurt, then we can't take care of other people.
I mean, it's like every time you fly on a plane, right?
Right. Take care of yourself. Put the oxygen mask on, mm-hmm. and then go help someone else. So I think that it just depends on the intent.
Right.
You know, are you helping because you're being selfish, or are you helping to help others?
Right.
Like, are you choosing yourself to help others? And I think that you got to have a lot of those thoughts, and you got to prepare your mind. It's definitely a mental space to get into before that happens, so that when that does happen, you can help. Because as a father, I need to make sure that I'm good mentally, spiritually, physically, and then the skill sets I need in those situations so that I can protect my family.
Right.
If I make sure that they're good and then I don't worry about me, I'm just as at risk or more so at risk.
Yeah.
So I think a little bit of that can be helpful, but I don't think that a lot of people put themselves into that mental space to have the correct intent, and they just choose themselves out of selfish, you know, sinfulness. And depravity. So another thought randomly.
Yeah, I think that's good. But isn't there always some element of like in that moment of where everything's going wrong, where there eventually comes a point when you can't get both masks on, right? If you so like the flying the plane, like, and that's a bad analogy, but there comes a point when you can't protect yourself and protect somebody else, or it's just absolutely impossible, where it literally is you or them.
Well, the first thing that comes to my mind is like triage in the healthcare field is you only have so many resources and people and supplies to save lives.
Mm-hmm.
So what do you do? Well, you have to organize people of those that can't be saved and those that can be saved, because you don't want to use too many resources on someone who's past the point. and then lose people that could be saved, and you're getting into very, very hard decision-making abilities.
Yeah. So, but
now you get to choose who lives and who dies.
Right. So,
and maybe that was too superficial. And
yeah, I'm trying to think of a good example. A good example is not the first example that popped into my head. Was I immediately like, you know, that's not a very good example. What I was thinking in my head. Let's think.
Well, your example. Let's create a hypothetical. So, mm-hmm. to your example in the plane, you realize the plane's going down. It's you or someone else, and only one oxygen mask's work.
Mm-hmm. There you go. Who gets it?
Who gets it?
Yeah. Is it you or is it the other person?
I think. And maybe I'd be playing my sinful hand here a little bit, but I think it depends on who that other person is.
Fair enough.
And maybe a parachute is better because if you have oxygen mask, the plane's going down, then you're both going to die regardless of who gets the mask. But so let's use the parachute analogy. Plane's going down. You have one parachute. Who gets it?
Yeah.
Me being the type A person, I'd say I'd strap it to my wife and then jump out. And then just hang on and hope that it carries both of us.
Yeah.
You find a way.
Yeah. But in that situation, you're the one putting yourself at risk. You're not putting someone else at risk.
Right.
Right. Yeah. Right.
Well, in that situation, the prior conversation about intent, keeping yourself healthy, alive, and sharp on your skills in order to handle those situations, whether it be de-escalation training or just communication, you know, firearms, jiu-jitsu, martial arts, whatever, self-defense. Maybe it's prepping. Maybe you have food. Maybe that's your thing or whatever it is. Maybe it's biblical knowledge so that you can train people in an apocalyptic scenario, whatever it is. In that situation with the parachute, The intent has to be someone needs to survive. Mm-hmm. In the prior conversation, there was a reason for you to survive. Mm-hmm. And when you have to choose one or the other, there's no reason for you to have to survive because you surviving means the death of another person.
Fair enough. Yeah.
So,
but that's the kind of situation that they are in the movie.
You think?
At least,
I think it ebbs and flows.
You never know exactly how dire a situation is. So at the very least, let's say at that moment, if that character were a real person, so
which one?
Emmett, and he's looking out at the family that he obviously knows. Mm-hmm. He's friends with the dad. He sees them. He recognizes them. He knows them.
Okay,
and he sees now the son is trapped in a bear trap.
Mm-hmm.
And he knows these monsters are all around. What that character is thinking is they're going to die.
Mm-hmm.
And he chooses to not do anything.
Well,
so from his perspective that is a moment of absolute certain death for them. Exactly.
Well,
really
it's worse than them or me because them have already stepped in the trap.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
So it would be a better example to say, do I step in the trap or do I let them?
Mm-hmm.
But once they step in the trap, then it would be more like, okay, they're gone.
Some people would say that's actually the reasonable decision to make, right? Some people would say that is pure reason right there. They're already gone. There's nothing I can do.
Yeah. Right?
So maybe that's what he's thinking. Maybe he's thinking,
Maybe.
They're already dead. No matter what I do, they're dead. I can't help. So he just doesn't try. Because even if I jump out there,
I think that's
they're
fair.
Gone.
No, I think that's fair. But you don't see that in the mom.
No, not at all.
You don't see that in the mom. Mom stays, even with a baby and a daughter.
Yep.
Mom stays, tries to get her son out of the trap.
Mm-hmm.
And you're sitting there watching the movie like, Killian, like, do something. Help. Yeah. Do something. You know who they are.
Yeah. You use his real name?
I forget his character's name.
Emmett. Yeah.
I'm going to remember that now.
Emmett. No last name. Emmett without a last name.
Yeah.
Just Emmett.
Like, Emmett, man.
Yeah.
Like, go help your family friends. But maybe, but here's in his defense, here's the other side of it. Just as much as he changed, he doesn't know how much they've changed.
Yeah.
So you really
know if they're,
you really don't you yeah. like in that situation, I don't now that I'm thinking about it, I don't necessarily blame him because you can't trust them either.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah.
I mean, kid steps in a trap and how do you know that in itself is not a trap or some
it's kind of that actually might be the point because there's a callback to that. And I wasn't ready to talk about the bridge scene or the dock scene yet.
Mm-hmm.
So, I mean, we'll get into that. But there's a callback there where there's a kid that's apparently, the kid looks like they need help.
Yeah, you're right.
It's a trap.
Yeah.
So yep. maybe, yeah.
You're right. I
so
forgot maybe, about that scene. You're right. Yeah.
Maybe he's thinking about that.
So you really can't trust anybody in those situations, which is really sad because the good, strong people want to help the weak, good people.
Mm-hmm.
But it's really, really hard to determine and discern who is who.
Yeah, I mean, and there's even really, I mean, there's minuscule examples of that, like, that aren't life and death. It's like when you encounter somebody begging for money,
yeah,
the argument not to do it is because they're just going to go buy it for booze. Like, this is a trap. They're setting me up. They're going to take my money and do something awful with it, right?
Or the one that I've heard is they're going to go walk down the street to their BMW.
Right, yeah.
And get in their car and drive
home.
It's
a trap, yeah. It's that because people do that, right?
Yeah.
That happens.
And it's unfortunate that people abuse that, mm-hmm. abuse the kindness of others to give back. I think I heard a statistic sometime, and I'm going to butcher it, so if somebody wants to fact check me, they can. But it was something like when you tax a population less, their giving and their generosity improves by like tenfold because the government's not taking it.
I hear that and I just like duh.
Duh, right? Duh.
Duh.
But
yeah.
But it's interesting to think like all of these stereotypes of the beggar or whoever. And they're going to go get in their car, or they're going to go buy booze, or they're going to go buy smoke or drugs or whatever, right? It's interesting that still doesn't stop people.
Yeah.
It's like, yeah. I don't care. Like, I'm still going to help somebody in spite of that.
Oh, you're talking about that stopping the people who are giving. Right. It doesn't stop the people. Okay, I thought you were saying it doesn't stop people from standing out there regardless of the stereotype.
It doesn't do that either,
right.
I'm sure.
Yeah.
It's just interesting how inversely it doesn't stop.
Yeah. Yeah, that's true. Yeah, that's...
So, but back to the scene, he doesn't help.
Right.
And then the following scenes prove that he knows who they are,
mm-hmm.
proves that he not only doesn't help, but
well,
doesn't
first he's
want
hiding
to,
his face, right?
Right, because they don't know who he is.
Right.
So not only does he not help...
Wearing a mask.
He's wearing a mask.
This was made in Scarecrow. Yeah. Have you seen my mask? This was originally supposed to come out in March of 2020. So this was supposed to come out when COVID like blew everything up and everyone's wearing masks to protect. But you know you can't see faces when people are wearing masks.
Yeah.
So they couldn't see his face and they didn't know who he was. But
it was
yeah.
really frowned upon to wear a mask into a bank until COVID. It's just interesting.
Yeah.
So
So they actually do know who he is, and he was unwilling to help.
He was unwilling to help, even after they found out who he was. Yeah. He was like, no, it's a lost cause.
He didn't want them to stay. He didn't.
Yeah, you're out of here. Yeah.
Yeah. And then the girl leaves.
Yeah. She's like, I'm out of here.
And why do you remember why she leaves?
Because of the hope her dad left.
Yeah.
That's how I would answer that.
Yep.
Dad left the hope for a solution or, a solution to the problem, which is the aliens, the weaponized hearing aids.
Do we know they're aliens.
I don't know if, yeah, I don't remember.
Because they do come, like, you see the meteor-like thing in the sky.
It would have to be an alien.
Maybe, yeah.
Alien race. But yeah, she leaves because she knows that there's a radio station that's broadcasting.
Mm-hmm. And she knows how to stop it.
Yeah.
Right? She knows how to stop
the monster. She knows that she has the weapon. All she needs is the transmission of the weapon.
So to that point, the way that I would compare the two movies, A Quiet Place Part 1 and A Quiet Place Part 2, is A Quiet Place Part 2 are Matthew, Mark, Luke, and John in the Bible, the four Gospels. Story of Jesus bringing salvation, and A Quiet Place Part 2 is the church taking the message out. It's those early chapters in Acts when the church is being established, and that now they've learned the message of salvation, and now they're taking it out. Because there's after the dock scene, which I still want to talk about a little bit. Actually, I'll go ahead and this can all relate. That dock scene where the girl leaves because she knows about the radio station, and she goes on that journey by herself. She doesn't tell her mom she's leaving. She her brother catches her, but she leaves anyway. And so she's on her journey, and then the mom convinces Cillian Murphy's character to find her, to go find her.
Right.
And so she has an idea of where she's going. And Beyond the Sea was a song, and that she said that they're telling us where to go. And I'll get back to what I was talking about in just a second. But so there's this bridge, I keep saying bridge over and over again, but it's a dock.
It's a dock.
It's a dock. It's a boat dock scene. And we referenced it earlier. There's a little kid who looks like they need help, and Cillian Murphy's character, which is opposite of what he would have done before, goes up and tries to help the character. And it's a trap. There's people all around him, and the suspense in this scene, there's so many little details about it, but the suspense in the scene just builds and builds and builds and builds, and it's like this incredible, you feel it. Like, you can't help but feel that tension building up over the scene, and that when I think of that line that I said is on the cover of the Blu-ray, that master class in suspense, that's the scene that immediately comes to mind, because it takes its time and builds the suspense to the point where you're like shaking on the edge of your seat, wondering what's going to happen. It's just, it does it perfectly. And I said there was one other show that...
Well, I think it's important about that scene too, and maybe you're getting to this, and stop me if I'm jumping too far ahead, but at the very end of that scene, after he jumps into the water and she jumps into the water, aliens get all of the bad guys or whatever, and then she helps get him into the boat, and the hope is preserved.
Yeah, he opens his mouth.
Yeah.
Which there's an analogy right there. He opens his mouth and out comes the hope.
The hope.
Yeah, yeah, that's good stuff right there. But the show that, in terms of just suspense, like absent from the message, in terms of just suspense, The Walking Dead used to do that really well. Like, Katie and I used to watch The Walking Dead every single Sunday night, and it would just allow things to build and build and build, and then they stopped doing that, and it became a terrible show, and we stopped watching it. But the early days of The Walking Dead was really good at that too. If you want another example of a show that builds tension like that, and it just did a really good job. But so that ends, and yeah, you're right. The hope is preserved. He opens his mouth. I didn't even think of that part right there, but when you said that was mind-blowing. But when they get to the island. So the monsters don't like water. They can't swim. They won't swim, right? So there being an island that is in the middle, is completely surrounded by water, means that the monsters theoretically can't get there unless they travel on something else, which, you know, is also part of the movie.
A boat.
There you go. Yeah. Or a floaty of some kind.
Floaty.
Maybe there could have been a canoe or something, or a
something. I think it was too far to make it, though.
Yeah, it was a long way. Paddle.
Because it doesn't seem that they were. So the reason why it's really hard to call them aliens is because I think often aliens are associated with a higher intelligence.
Mm-hmm.
And these creatures, which is really what
pure
we
pure instinct. I
it's
think.
Just pure instinct.
Yeah.
It's I hear it and I'm gonna go kill it.
Yeah. Pure instinct.
So
another movie I just thought, and I'll eventually get back around to my point, but we'll get there in a second. But another movie that I just thought of, we said at the beginning, we don't know of another show like it. Maybe, have you seen Signs with Mel Gibson?
No, I haven't.
Maybe that might be the closest the closest comparison.
Like of its kind, yeah. Maybe. Yeah.
I think that might be the best one, but
I'd have to go watch it.
Yeah, you should watch it. That's a good one, too. I think there's a lot that can be.
The cornfields and mm-hmm. That's the signs, right?
Signs, yep. Yeah. Alien invasion.
Yeah, I know about it, but I haven't seen it.
Yeah, I think that's a good, it's probably a good example. So let's get back around to the point. But they arrive at this island and find a community of people who've been living there for however long, probably not more than like a year or two, but for however long they've been there. And the man who's kind of in charge assumes that the girl and Cillian Murphy's character arrived at the island because they were searching for help. And no, one of them says, no, we're here to give you help. Because what do they have? They have the solution with them. And they're there to provide. They are going from where they were to where somebody else is to provide them with the answer and the solution.
Right.
Which is exactly what we see throughout the book of Acts. In Acts chapter 8, you know, the church is under extreme persecution. In Acts chapter 7, we see the murder of Stephen, who's one of the first deacons of the church. And it says that Saul, who is later known as Paul, is there and he's approving of what he sees. So and then it says that he goes about dragging and pulling Christians, people who were preaching the gospel. He was dragging them to prison. He was overseeing the, you know, murders and all of that stuff. And as a result, the church was scattered. So in Acts chapter 8, we see this example of Philip, who first it says in Acts chapter 8 verse 4, it says, "Now those who were scattered went about preaching the word." And I think we can just look at that as a passing passage telling us what happened. That's just a little verse telling us what happened. But just really think about that. They were being under such extreme persecution that they had to run for their lives. That's what was going on here. That they just witnessed the murder of a person in their community. That they just witnessed this murder and they're now running for their lives. So spreading all throughout the region so that that doesn't happen to them as well. And it says, now those who were scattered went about preaching the word. So this wasn't even an act of, I'm going to go somewhere where I'm going to leave where I'm comfortable and go somewhere where I'll start a church and preach the gospel or go on a missions trip somewhere. This was, I'm going to run for my life and I am in a panic and I need to get out of here now. But yet, while I'm in that mental state, I go about preaching the word. While I'm running away from my life, the people who I encounter who are not running away from their lives, I'm going to tell them the thing that's causing me to have to leave everything that I've known, that's costing me my safety. I'm going to go tell them because I know how great of a solution and how great it is. And so where the a guy that I used to meet with often, and he's somebody who invested in me a lot in college, but you know, he used the phrase of, wherever they went, the gospel went with them. wherever they went, the gospel went with them. And I think that's huge, because the gospel isn't just something, meaning the message of Jesus and what he did on the cross, that he lived a perfect life, that we can't do that. We are incapable of living a perfect life, of pleasing God whatsoever. But Jesus came to earth, lived a perfect life, pleased God in everything that he did, and then was condemned to die as a criminal, as a sinner. Why? Not because he was one, but because we are. And something has to die to pay for sin. So he lived the perfect life that we can't, died the death that we deserve, and then resurrected in new life. That's the message, that wherever this church that was under severe persecution, that wherever they go, that message went with them, and not just went with them, but was proceeding and coming out of their mouths. When they opened their mouths, the hope came out, like the example that you gave. When he opened his mouth, the hope was preserved. And that's exactly what was happening, even though they were running for their lives. Wherever they went, the gospel went with them. So they could be leaving this persecution, and someone could have literally said, not that the Bible says it or anything like that, but just picture this. Somebody could have encountered them and said, oh, have you come here for help? And they could have said, no, I came to give it. And they, even though they were running for their lives, they were in the more dangerous situation, yet they're coming to give the help. And that's what Christians are to do. They're to go, what's the Great Commission, go to all nations, teaching them to obey all that I've commanded, baptizing them in the name of the Father, Son, and Holy Spirit, teaching them to obey all that I've commanded. That's Jesus' commandment to his church. They're to go, and wherever they go, the message of the gospel is to be on their lips, to come, proceed from their mouth with words. And that's what we see here, is the girl who's in a terrible situation, who is in more danger than the people she's going to. She's not going to get help. She's going to give it. And it flows from there, and she's there to give it. And then, you know, the story doesn't end there. In the movie, it keeps going. But that's probably the most prominent takeaway that I would see from this movie. What are your thoughts?
I don't know if I could say it any better. I mean, that's great. Let me ask you this. What if there's a person in the audience that doesn't believe in the Bible, doesn't believe Jesus is who he says he was, or is, and what if their question to us was, you guys believe a certain thing, and you're only finding what you want to find?
Mm-hmm.
What would you say to that person?
Well, I'm more so, I think there's a few things that come to mind. Let's examine those merits of what we're saying based on the legitimacy of what we're saying. So okay, if not that, then what? Let me know, you know? And then, okay, but how does that fit into your worldview? Let's say what I'm saying, all this about God, all this about who Jesus is, all this, let's say, you know, let me step into your worldview for a second. That's absolutely not true. Okay, let's assume that for a second. Okay, then what does all this mean?
Yeah.
And have a conversation about that, and let's find that out. But that is the question, okay? Let's assume this. Okay, now what? Where's the beauty in the story?
Yeah.
Where's the need for the self-sacrificial things that happen in throughout the story? Where's the need for this girl to bring hope to the people that she's going to?
To save anyone.
Yeah. Where's the need?
What sense of morality exists? Exactly.
Because she could hoard
that
information and just save her and her own family. And then, or her and the people right next to her.
So one would say that without even trying, they shared the hope because there was some sense of dignity for other people.
Right. They might say that, but why?
Why?
Right.
If there's no God, if there's no moral, objective morality, if there's no nothing, why does another human have dignity?
Right. Exactly.
From the Christian worldview, we would say that they're inherently dignified because they're made in the image of God.
For sure.
But if 100%. But if you remove God, and what's why?
It would have there, to there come would be down no to reason, like
it would just what class
in
status.
It would have to probably come down. Ultimately, it would come down to some type of instinctual preservation of the species.
That would be, yeah.
That would have to be the ultimate, that in a worldview that doesn't make room for God and says that God does not exist, that's the end. That's all you can do is say,
because we
well,
need
then,
to exist. But why?
Because, right.
So why do we need to exist?
Right. What would, if in your worldview, what would happen if
we stopped existing?
And what would it matter?
And to say that humans need to exist still comes from a sense of life is better than no life. Why?
Right. And then also,
why does life matter?
Yeah.
Why?
Yep. What is the standard that tells you life matters? Right. That's huge. And then also, when you say that, it just comes down to our instinctual desire to exist, like the preservation. I think I might have just clipped. I'm sorry if I'm talking too loud. The preservation of our species, right? Then if that's all you have, you've also just lost any moral good. You've lost any moral saying it is good for someone to save someone else. No, it's not good. It's just selfish.
Say that again.
If the ultimate reason for somebody going to sacrifice themselves or putting themselves at risk for the sake of somebody else, mm-hmm. is nothing more than an instinctual desire to preserve our species, an instinctual desire to continue the existence of humans, if that's it, if that's all it is, then nothing, you have no standard of good, right? Because it's not me making a moral choice.
Right, right. It's just
not me saying this is what's right. It's me saying I can't help but do this. So my brain, the chemicals in my brain are...
There's no decision.
Reacting in a certain way where I have to go do it this way. There's no moral good. There's no moral bad. There's just whatever my instincts tell me to do, in which case you lose all ability to judge. Okay, this person killed somebody. Is that what their instincts told them to do?
Right.
But when I do what my instincts tell me to do, I don't kill somebody, and I say that's good. They do what their instincts tell them to do, and they kill somebody. They say that's good. How do I choose which one is good?
Right. Yep. Good stuff, man. That's good. Go back to the boat scene.
What about the boat scene?
So I don't know if you finished.
I think I did.
Get through it?
Yeah, I did.
Okay.
Got through it. Yeah.
I thought maybe my question stopped you.
No. We were still right there. I was just asking for your thoughts on what. Yeah. So that's the message. The message is you have hope. So this would be the challenge or the call to the Christians who are listening to the podcast is you have hope. Open your mouth and reveal it.
Because ultimately, you're saving the souls. Like the Bible talks about, like let those with ears to hear. Mm-hmm. And this is where it gets crazy. Is the Bible also says in Romans chapter 9, what is it? I can't remember the verse. I know it's Romans chapter 9 though. It may be in the 20s, maybe verse 20 or something like that. But it says, "Cannot the potter make out of clay?" What is it? Read it, because I don't want to get it wrong.
So,
I'm going off of memory.
So yeah, this is Romans 9:20. But who are you, O man, to answer back to God? Will what is molded say to its molder, why have you made me like this? And then 21, has the potter no right over the clay to make out of the same lump one vessel for honorable use and another for dishonorable use?
Keep going.
What if God, desiring to show his wrath, to make known his power, has endured much with much patience, vessels of wrath prepared for destruction, in order to make known the riches of his glory for vessels of mercy, which he has prepared beforehand for glory, even us, whom he has called, not from the Jews only, but also from the Gentiles.
Yeah, so there's a lot to unpack out of that verse.
For sure.
But the main thing is, and maybe you can, please feel free to correct me, because there's no script here. The existence, so it's important to only teach what the Bible teaches and to remain silent when it's silent.
Mm-hmm.
But pulling out from that verse the existence of, to some degree, the existence of evil has to be good.
Right.
Just the existence. Not the evil things happening is good. But how can you fully understand the glory that God can give without
Well, God opposite? Takes things that are evil, right?
Yeah.
And uses them for good. You know,
right.
Joseph, when he's confronting his brothers that sold him into slavery, what you meant for evil, God meant for good.
And the question is, who sent Joseph to Egypt?
Right.
Yeah.
And it's both.
It's both.
His brothers.
But for different motives.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Right.
Simultaneously. It's not that this thing happened and then God made a right turn to make it good. No. While evil is happening, God is also turning it to good simultaneously at the same time.
Yep.
And this is crazy, but God can make, you know, so let those with ears to hear, but there are people that won't.
Mm-hmm.
And God makes things for destruction no differently than he makes things for glory.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
It's just crazy stuff, man.
That's good.
So we have to use our mouths, open our mouths to communicate the hope.
Mm-hmm.
And that's, so it's relieving for the Christian, because all we are commanded to do, we're not commanded to change someone's mind.
Right.
We're not commanded to reach a quota. But I think the disconnect is, there's two thoughts here. We're it's relieving because all we have to do is communicate the hope.
Mm-hmm.
That's it. That's our job. We're to sow the seeds so that at Christ's second coming, he can reap the harvest.
Mm-hmm.
Right? So it's interesting that the non-believer, the atheist, or someone who doesn't believe in Christianity will say, you're shoving your beliefs down my throat.
Mm-hmm.
Which is so indicative of the enemy deceiving, because from our perspective, we're trying to give you the help.
Mm-hmm.
We're here to give you the help. Not, we don't need the help. We're giving you the answer that has been given to us. So, like, that's one thing that stuck out to me is, you know, a lot about talking about the Bible and teaching different things. It's like, man, I'm so unworthy. And you said, because you are.
Mm-hmm.
And the nature of Christianity is to pass down what has been passed down to you.
Mm-hmm.
But when we pass that down, the opposition is, you're shoving it down our throat. And it's almost like they think that we wrote the book.
Mm-hmm.
It's like something that we conjured up and then now we're trying to push on other people. But it's not. It's God conjured it up and we have just we have understood. I think in Matthew, where does it talk about it may be the parable of, it talks about understanding, where you have to understand it. Maybe it may be the parable of the what's the roots, the rocky ground, the rocky soil.
Yeah,
is that what I'm? Am I right? It's somewhere in there, right? It may be Matthew.
Yeah, I know. I don't know the exact verse, but I know what you're talking about. The exact passage.
Here, I'm gonna look it up because I don't want to get it wrong. You got it, or you want me to look it up?
I don't have it yet. No.
But anyway, while you're looking that up, it talks about how there's different forms of understand, or there's different forms of where you kind of fit in the faith, where you take off really fast, and you're super pumped about it, and that's like the rocky soil, and your roots don't grow. But there's an aspect of the one who hears and understands last the test of time. And that's the difference, is there's a sense of understanding, and then it's coupled with later on in Matthew, where he says, "Let those with ears hear," which I think it's only a few pages.
So Matthew chapter 13, if we're thinking of the same thing, that same day Jesus went out of the, this is starting in verse 1, that same day Jesus went out of the house and sat beside the sea, and great crowds gathered about him, so that he got into a boat, sat down, and the whole crowd stood on the beach. And he told them many things in parables, saying, "A sower went out to sow, and as he sowed, some seeds fell along the path, and the birds came and devoured them. Other seeds fell on rocky ground, where they did not have much soil, and immediately they sprang up, since they had no depth of soil. But when the sun rose, they were scorched, and since they had no root, they withered away. Other seeds fell among thorns, and the thorns grew up and choked them. Other seeds fell on good soil and produced grain, some 100-fold, some 60, some 30. He who has ears, let him hear." And he goes on later in Matthew chapter 13 to explain that parable. So starting in verse 18, he starts to explain the parable.
Yeah, and 18 is kind of what I was remembering too. So Matthew 13, verse 18, says, "Hear then the parable of the sower. When anyone hears the word of the kingdom and does not understand it, the evil one comes and snatches away what has been sown in his heart. This is what was sown along the path." So referencing the path, referencing the parable of the sower. And then 20 says, "As for what was sown on rocky ground, this is the one who hears the word and immediately receives it with joy. Yet he has no root in himself, but endures for a while, and when tribulation or persecution arises on account of the word, immediately he falls away. As for what was sown among thorns, this is the one who hears the word, but the cares of the world and the deceitfulness of riches choke the word, and it proves unfruitful. 23, as for what was sown on good soil, this is the one who hears the word and understands it. He indeed bears fruit and yields in one case 100-fold, in another 60, in another 30. So understanding it, there's an importance of understanding the word. Mm-hmm. So I would ask you, Nick, if I'm someone who doesn't understand the word, you know, let's say I'm caught in between like atheism or, you know, Christianity. I just really struggle with, you know, I believe the materialism of the world. You know, I just, if I can't see it, I'm struggling. How do I get to the other side? How do I believe in something that I can't necessarily see? And when I read the Bible, I really don't understand it. How would you direct that person?
Well,
I know there's a couple of questions in there that you may need some time to unpack, but
yeah, I think so. The first step is, when you read the Bible, what does that mean for you? Like, do you mean that you read it once a long time ago and then didn't understand and gave up and haven't since? Like, do you mean that you're actively engaging in it, reading it, trying to understand, you're asking questions about it, you just can't get it? Like, so I would want to know more about that, because, and this is a bit of a stereotype, and I don't mean it in a negative way, but typically the person who is a naturalist isn't going to be actively reading their Bible looking for understanding from it. That's just typically not going to be what's happening. But if you are actively reading the Bible and you have that desire inside of you to find truth in it, and you want to get it and you want to understand it, but you just think you can't, my first thing is to go to Romans, and I don't have the chapter and verse off the top of my head, but to just lovingly let you know that those in the flesh cannot please God and do not understand the things that are spiritual.
Chapter 3.
Yeah. So that's the first thing.
That's
the first hurdle, is if you're just simply going to it from a place of naturalist views, and your heart hasn't been renewed, you haven't been reborn, then there's no surprise that it's not understanding, because understanding the word of God requires the Spirit of God to do a work in you to make you get it, right? It requires you to be awakened to truth, like to be awakened to the Word of God and to reality, essentially, because we're dead in our sins and trespasses, and that is everyone, that is every person. That's what it says in Ephesians. That's what Paul says in Ephesians chapter 2, that when we were dead, we is the word there. When we were dead in our sins and trespasses, and it says that God has saved us by grace. It is by grace you have been saved, not through works, so that no one may boast. So it's God doing something in you. And if you have any desire whatsoever, anything in you that's saying, man, I want to know more about this God, I want to know more about the Word, and then the very first thing is to do what Romans says. Romans chapter 10, if you confess with your mouth that Jesus is Lord and believe in your heart that God raised him from the dead, you will be saved. So the very first thing is to allow whatever that desire is inside of you. And I actually gave this example in a sermon on Sunday, this past Sunday, that we suppress naturally, apart from God, we suppress the truth and unrighteousness, and we're pushing it down. We know, everyone knows God exists. It's revealed to everybody. Everyone knows it, but you're suppressing the truth and unrighteousness, trying as hard as you can to keep it down. So to go along with what Romans 10 says, stop pushing it down and allow it, release the pressure. Let it proceed from inside of you and exit out your mouth in the form of a confession. Jesus is Lord, and God raised him from the dead. And the Bible says if you confess with your mouth that Jesus is Lord and believe in your heart that God raised him from the dead, you will be saved. And once the Spirit of God changes you in that way, then start reading the Bible. Because you can understand facts. You can understand some of the history surrounding the Bible. And that's all good and fun to talk about. And it can provide you like, oh, well, that's how it happened. And you can look at archaeology and how they found specific places and people that the Bible mentions that are mentioned nowhere else in any historical document, and they found tombs with these people's names on them and all that. You can look at the accuracy of the Bible, and it is accurate. But what it ultimately comes down to is if your heart has not been changed, you're not going to understand what it's really saying. And so the first thing is exactly what Romans 10 says. Jesus is Lord. God raised him from the dead. Believing and trusting that. And then start reading the scripture with a new lens, with new eyes, a new ability to see, and see what comes out of it.
That's good stuff, man. That's good stuff. A Quiet Place 2. What did you not like about it?
I can't think of a single thing I didn't like about it.
It's so good.
Yeah.
It is so good.
Yeah.
I have one thing to talk about,
boy.
Though.
Oh, no.
I have one thing to talk about, Nick.
Oh, no.
So in the first movie that we did a review on, we got into a pretty epic debate about the waterfall.
Yeah.
In this movie, the sprinkler systems were enough with an alien creature 20 feet away from her to deaden the sounds of a revolver, metal revolver hitting iron, opening up the big door that is supposedly heavy, closing the door, her footsteps walking towards it. I'm just saying.
Well, her footsteps would have been in water.
Her footsteps would have been
in water. That would have been the sound of splashing.
Yep.
And that sound alone would have repelled the thing,
so
right?
So you're still maintaining your position that sprinkler systems would have been loud enough to deaden the sound to make her invisible to the creature.
I think something that they reveal, and maybe it was an after the fact thing, but I think something that they show in this movie is that the things don't like to be in water at all.
But the creature, from my memory, not could be wrong, but from the creature that was in the sprinkler system water didn't react the same way as the one that couldn't swim.
How did that one react? I can't remember.
Well, I mean, I might not searching. It was just searching. It wasn't freaking out or panicking. But the one that was submerged couldn't swim and was like freaking out.
Maybe it's just different levels of panic because they're in different levels of peril.
But
I don't know. I really don't know. I can't remember the details of that to even make a good argument because my instinct is just to stick with my other argument.
I know
it is. But I don't know. I don't remember enough specifically about that and the way it was presented to say one way or the other.
Okay. Well, I think it's going to have to go to the comment section. So if you watch this movie and you have a position, you need to post. Leave us a comment. Tell us who's right, who's wrong. tell us your opinion and let us know because we need to get to the bottom of this. We'll even put a poll out. Who's right, Parker or Nick?
Is the water a plot hole? Is that what you would say?
I would say that, but in the poll, I would want because more of it, to me, it's more of a consistent plot thread.
Okay,
for me, because if it was just the first movie, you may have a better argument. But with the second movie, there's less water. The creature is closer, and still can't hear her.
See,
so I
guess that
kind of debunks your point.
Well, my point in the first movie was kind of speculative that the sound just outweighs it because they didn't say anything in the first movie about the creature's willingness to go in or around water. Just that if you're behind the waterfall, so that was my assumption about that.
Right.
But I think in this movie, they expand on that to say that the creatures won't or can't swim, and when they're in water, I don't know exactly what they do. There's still
details.
Well,
it just sounds
like
they drown because they can't swim.
So, you know, and would there potentially be different levels of that kind of panic?
Yeah,
depending on the level
of.
We'd
have to go back and watch that specific scene because I don't think that there was a lot of panic in the other.
Well, I mean, just freezing and looking around could be a type of like a deer in headlights.
Oh, I see. I still think
whereas,
he was searching for her.
Maybe.
But
I don't know necessarily that it was because he couldn't hear.
Maybe.
I mean, because like, so let's say I'll use the Dark Knight.
Okay.
The interrogation scene with the Joker and Batman, right? He says, you never start, like Batman comes, slams his head down. You never start with the head because they can't feel the next blow.
Yeah.
It's something like that going on where the water has now traumatized this creature and has dulled his sense of his ability to feel or see or hear the next thing. Like it has he now been traumatized, even though not like the one who's drowning in water or whatever, but has he been traumatized to the point like the Joker was that he can't get to the next thing?
Well, I think that's what the movie portrays, but when you talk about the consistency of the, we'll call that, what do we call that? The consistency of that thread of reality within the film. I don't think that there's a consistency there. Because in the first movie, there's a ton of water in a waterfall, and then you can scream and yell. But in the second movie, it's just, you know, fire sprinklers.
I think that only because, well, for one, I'll tell you, I think in the first movie, they had no plans for a sequel. They didn't have plans to make another movie.
Right.
So
probably, but that still doesn't excuse the fact for a bad plot. Or
I just wouldn't define it as bad.
I don't know if it's bad, but maybe just I think bending suspension of disbelief too far.
I just think they never give you a reason in the first movie. So you're just
left.
What
do you mean a reason?
They never give you an exact reason why you can go to the waterfall, right? They never say it in the first movie. So you're just left to kind of come up with your own reasons, right? So when I'm watching the first movie, my speculation that they don't tell you this would have been that the sound of the waterfall just outweighs, like outdoes the sound of everything else.
If it would have stopped there,
but it sounds like I'm wrong about that, and that they actually give you a reason in the second movie. They actually state it about the creature's unwillingness to go near or in water.
Yeah, so you're saying the only reason why you're wrong is because they made a second movie.
I'm saying the only reason. I'm saying my speculation was speculation.
Right.
And I didn't. And that's.
But so.
Because they never gave you the reason, I don't see it as a plot hole. I just see it as something that they didn't reveal and you're left to speculate about.
So you're arguing from the sense of the first movie by itself, and I'm arguing from both movies, across both movies.
Well, no, I'm
across
saying...
Across both movies, it doesn't make sense. The thread of reality within the movies with the water... And to the degree in which it drowns out the noise,
I'm saying that that was never the reason, is what I'm saying. I'm saying they never give you a reason in the first movie, and now you know it when you watch the second movie. That is the exact same reason. You just didn't know it at the time.
Yeah, but what I'm saying is, no. I mean, I can concede there. But I don't necessarily think that that's what I'm saying, because what I'm saying and arguing is without, so forget the reasoning.
Mm-hmm.
All we know in the first movie is that if you go into the waterfall, it drowns out the sound enough that you can be loud and the creatures won't hear you. It's all we know.
No, all we know is that the waterfall is safe. We don't know why.
Okay, maybe that's fair, but it was
because they never say why. They just go and they do it. They scream in the waterfall, and you're left. I mean, that does imply like you are left to kind of assume.
Right.
They just don't say.
Right. And then in the second movie,
they tell you why water is safe.
Well, they say water is safe because they can't swim.
Right.
But they don't tell you that it puts them into some type of peril.
Well, I think they demonstrate that with the reaction of the things when they're in water.
Well, when they're submerged in water, they just can't swim. So they're drowning and they're trying to be safe.
Yeah.
So I don't know if that's some psychological
but if
or
you can't
mental
see,
theory.
If you're in a situation that you're hopeless in, okay, so let's say you're drowning. I guess drowning is a good example. Every time you touch water or go in water, you're going to drown, and you know that. But you can't see. And then you feel water.
That actually may be a good point.
Because they can't see. They can hear the water, and they can feel the water on them, but they don't have eyes to see where they're
going. Your point is that it's not necessarily them not being able to hear because the water is louder. I took from the movie...
That's what I took from the first movie, what you're saying now.
I took that from the first movie. And then the second movie, you're saying...
They kind of say, no, that's not the case.
Okay. But I still think that with the hearing aspect of it... it wasn't... The amount of noise that's being blocked out now, because she was still quiet,
right?
She was still tiptoeing and still moving really carefully. Yep. She wasn't screaming like before,
right.
But I still think that there's a little far fetched.
The other side of that is they still don't know why. Meaning, the people that knew why were the people living on the island.
Well, did they even know why?
They were the ones that said they can't swim, right?
Well, they knew that they couldn't swim, but did they know about any of the noise?
They probably didn't. But so, like, it's like people who know different pieces coming together. So,
right.
And the mom that's in the scene that you're talking about never, at least in the movie, doesn't make it to the island. We never see her at the island to find out what they know.
Right.
So she's only going off of what she knows. She sees, so like, in that moment, she still only knows so much. Right? She knows, she can think back to her own experience, probably, which they don't ever show her at the waterfall in the first movie, but you can make the assumption.
Right. That, yeah, I would right? agree. Yeah.
So she's thinking back to her own experience, and she knows what happens there at the waterfall. And her character would be assuming reasons and why that's the case, and then seeing now, okay, here's this beast who seems to be stunned a little bit about by water. And then her own reasoning is, oh, is it the sound? Because I can scream at the waterfall back home. And so she's quiet, trying to be quiet as she moves away, or be as quiet as she possibly can. She doesn't know why. She doesn't know, you know, what it is about water, but she knows that there's something there. So she's reacting as if she knows bits and pieces. The character doesn't know, and that's the thing.
Interesting. I think that's a good point, but I still think that the amount of noise cancellation that the water has is not it's exponential. It's not linear. And
but that's not the actual reason that the water does anything. That's just the reason you're led to believe in the first movie, and that's what the lady thinks in the moment.
But that's what they allude to in that moment.
Not really. I think it's more so what I was talking about earlier.
Well, when I watched that, I never once thought about the water stunning the animal in a way.
And maybe I'm wrong. I don't know.
But I think the comments section should decide.
Yeah.
So, all right, guys. Thanks for joining us for this episode of the Watchable Podcast on A Quiet Place. Please, if you're on Facebook, share your favorite episode to your Facebook page. And if you're new to the podcast, go ahead, check us out on Facebook, Instagram. We've got a Patreon page. If you like what we're doing, you want to get behind us financially, that will be in the description. Let's see, Rumble and YouTube, we've got channels there. You can subscribe, like, and comment on the episodes. Subscribe to the channel. It helps with the algorithm. It gets us pushed to more people. And in the audio podcast, don't forget to rate our podcast. You can go up to the very top. There's stars. You can click on the star that best describes how much you like the podcast. If you like,
hopefully
it,
it's a five.
Hopefully it's a five. It's a five. We'll keep doing what we're doing. If it's not a five, then go to one of our YouTube videos, leave a comment, and let us know what we can improve on. If you want to pick the next movie coming up in 2023, let us know. We want to get some discussion going on the next movie. We'd love to get to the point where Nick and I are not picking movies and it's 100% the fair people enough watching pick the movies. We will move that way. Let us know. And again, we appreciate you guys checking us out. We'll see you next time.
That might have been the best episode.